Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast, where Polar interviews people so you can do more investing and less gambling.
Hello, everyone. It is Polar here, the CMO of Seasonal Tokens. Welcome on another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast. Today, we have another special guest. We have Matthew, the CEO of Kayaks. Kayaks is bringing institutional-grade financial source of truth business reporting to digital asset companies. In this episode, we discuss topics like Celsius, why Celsius has failed, what to search for when you are researching companies to invest in, what are the costly mistakes that Matthew has learned, what is his investment strategy, and many more topics. Before we start, I just want to remind you that none of the information should be considered as a financial advice. All the information is an opinion of the speaker. So have fun and enjoy the podcast. Okay, Matthew, thank you very much for joining our podcast today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Polar.
Amazing. So I think that you have a lot of great insights to share with our listeners. But before that, can you introduce yourself and your background with a few words?
Sure. So my name is Matthew De La Fuente. I'm currently based between London and San Francisco. I am the CEO of Kayaks, that's K-Y-A-X, bringing institutional grade, pre-accounting and financial source of data business reporting to digital asset companies. I started my career in investment banking. I then decided that, you know, Excel really wasn't for me and PowerPoint was the future, and I switched to management consulting. I then went to Harvard, and I was also a teaching fellow at the Harvard Innovation Lab, where I was focused on building and scaling businesses. I then went back to management consulting to pay off my student debt and also to focus on VC and PE-backed growth companies. And I saw a lot of really interesting case studies, mainly in the SaaS space. And I'd say for the past 15 years, I've really been focused on growth in SaaS companies. That's growth operations, growth systems, growth data, growth HR, and so on and so forth. And what's really interesting about that is that I saw a lot of similarities with regards to how those SaaS companies and functions grew and how crypto has evolved and grown. For the past 4 to 5 years, I've been involved really deeply in crypto. And for two of those, I was with Celsius, where I was the second operations hire, and helped the company grow from, let's say, less than a billion assets under management to 30 billion assets under management, about 150,000 Bitcoin, and helped them close their $750 million raise. After Celsius, I really looked at the entire crypto ecosystem and realized that there was this intense pain around not being able to find your financial source of truth. And we weren't quite early enough to save FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, and so on and so forth. But hopefully we'll be able to save the next wave of companies.
Really nice. Like, it is an amazing background. Like I said, you definitely have a lot of insights to share with with our listeners, but I'm really curious to know what has attracted you to the crypto and Web3 space when you have had a great success in the Web2 world.
It's a great question. I was at Celsius for approximately 2 years, and every single day, bar none, I had to learn a brand new thing. Every single day, my brain hurt. Every single day, there was a new category, a new project, a new way of thinking or doing something. It was just the most exciting ecosystem you could possibly be involved with. And for a lifelong learner who believes in the principles of decentralization of authority, who believes in the principles of sovereignty of people and money, you literally couldn't find a better industry to be involved with.
So you are saying that you have been somehow attracted to the space because of the freedom that provides to its customers and users.
Not only that, but just the sheer energy and scale of evolution is unlike anything I've ever seen before or experienced.
Really nice. And the first company that you have somehow felt the spirit of crypto was Celsius. You haven't been doing anything related to crypto before that.
Oh, no, I was. I was involved with a few failed projects. I was involved with some tokens that didn't go anywhere. I was involved with some, you know, folks who rug pulled, so to speak, from me. You know, a lot of learning went into my education before I came to Celsius.
Okay. So you have been able to experience the whole crypto world by being in these companies before Celsius, because if you're not rug pulled, like, it's these days, it's like you haven't been in crypto long enough.
Yes. Look, all of that was really painful learning experiences. However, all of the money involved, I see as part of my education fund. It didn't materially damage my life, but it was truly an amazing experience.
Yeah. Sometimes it's this is the way that you pay for your lessons, with your money and with your mistakes. And when you realize what are the lessons, which you should do, because like it's the same like in a standard education, you can pay thousands upon thousands of dollars, but if you don't spend the time to learn what they are teaching you, like it's a waste. So in most of the cases, it's the same in crypto investing. Like you can be rug pulled, but if you don't make the conclusions why this has happened and how to not happen again to you, like you have wasted your funds. So like you said, it's a great way to learn. It's part of your learning curve, and you have to go through this so you can know the ins and outs of crypto. But I want to bring you to this, I suppose, very interesting question for many people, which is the favor of Celsius. Nobody expected this to happen, I suppose. Like at least 90%+ of the people, especially those that have used it, me included. So you said that you have been working there. I suppose you have left it before the ship started to sink. So what do you think have been the main reasons Celsius to reach this point?
So it's a good question. And there will be many, many books written about the failure of Celsius and others. When I look back, I see three big items that damaged Celsius to the point where it couldn't really recover. The first is there were a series of engagements, incidents that went under the radar from a lot of folks, but they're all there on the internet for everyone to see. So I'm not telling anyone anything they don't already know. So let's take EFH, Celsius paid back a loan from EFH, and EFH refused to give Celsius back the collateral. That was around $450 million worth of collateral that Celsius did not get back. Other instances, like Fireblocks, lost the keys to some Celsius assets. I think that that legal case is still ongoing. And so on and so forth. So before we even get to any type of, let's say, you know, strategic thinking, we have counterparties that have failed, counterparties that are not behaving as they are supposed to. And so Celsius is going forward with these significant holes in their balance sheet. Once the organization took on institutional money, they took on enterprise level leadership. And what was really sad was that they looked at Celsius as a multi-billion dollar company, and they were unable to see that Celsius was still a startup. It still needed to be built. Very much like all of these digital asset companies, they all still need a lot of infrastructure building. But the enterprise leadership just could not see that. They could not understand that huge amounts of the business were run on Google Sheets and human sweat. And because of that, there were two things that happened. One, the investment in infrastructure was not put in place. And the second thing is when the rumors started around Celsius's solvency and insolvency, the enterprise leadership, who all came from big enterprise companies, looked at the balance sheet, looked at the financials, and they're like, this is rubbish. This is garbage. These rumors mean nothing. We're just going to ignore them because we're adults. Because this is what you do in a TradFi world. You simply keep doing business as usual. And before they knew it, confidence had crashed, the withdrawals had started, and the institutional withdrawals were happening at a much greater rate than the retail withdrawals. So rather than let the retail investors suffer the huge impact and bear the brunt of the withdrawals and the Chapter 11, there was a decision made to stop withdrawals early and basically go into Chapter 11 with a more organized, in a more organized manner, and make sure that the retail investors didn't get completely wiped out compared to the institutional. And then this was all compounded by the fact that the infrastructure, which the leadership didn't invest in, wasn't strong enough or fast enough to manage the risk and the liquidity issues that were being put onto Celsius at the time.
Okay. And before we move to the next topic, I'm really interested to know your opinion. Do you think that Celsius can still make it and somehow survive and give back the money to all its clients, or it's a game without a good end?
Again, it's a great question. I think that my opinion shifts almost by the day, depending on where the crypto markets are going. I think that Celsius had a lot of assets available to it, everything from the mining company to the community, to the pieces of infrastructure that are still left inside the company. But as this Chapter 11 process goes on, the chance of a successful exit for Chapter 11 goes down.
Okay, so if they manage to somehow finish with that as soon as possible, you're saying that there is a chance for them to make it and somehow to rebirth Celsius?
Well, I don't think it would be called Celsius. I think it would be rebranded. But Polar, with regards to other companies that have gone through this process, are you familiar with Accenture?
I have heard it, but not
okay.
That informed about it.
Okay, so Accenture emerged from a similar situation where the prior brand name, the prior company, was damaged, and now in the marketplace, very few people remember that. You know, there's a very standard procedure with regards to how these companies emerge. The question is, will there be enough capital and value remaining inside of Celsius to emerge?
Makes total sense. And you said that they still have their community. Don't you think that the community has already lost their hope and belief in the project? Even if they rebranded, it's still Celsius for them, right?
So, Pola, I think that this is where it gets very interesting. I think that there's a split between the institutional customers and the retail customers. Personally, I believe that the retail side of the business has probably ended. But on the institutional side, there's still a desperate need for the services and products that Celsius Institutional was offered and was offering.
Okay, so if they decide to rebrand the company, you believe that the better focus would be to institutional investors, not retail investors?
Unfortunately, yes, I believe that.
Okay. And if I'm not wrong, your company, Kayax, is somehow doing something to help other companies not to achieve this level of success, or let's say failure directly. So can you explain, like, with simple terms, how your company can help other companies not to reach this amazing point of Chapter 11?
Sure. So Kayax helps system and data constrained crypto business leaders get the right data into the right hands with the right reports and the right report formatting. We consolidate all of the transactions, blockchains, Excels, Google Sheets, custodians, exchanges, and so on and so forth. We encode those transactions with relevant metadata, and then we deliver a complete financial statement, allowing people to close their books, and we deliver business reports to the CFO, to the accountant, to the head of legal. And we have found that business reports, these crypto business leaders, these digital asset business leaders, are able to make better, more well-rounded decisions that really help drive the correct conversations to navigate this particular point in the market.
Okay, so while you have been talking about it and we discussed before the recording too, it seems that a good amount of crypto companies, including FTX, have been doing this generation of data by just using Google Sheets and things like that, but not combining the whole data and not having it in a way that is representable, in a way that it makes sense, in a way that it can conceive some sort of belief. And this makes me think that the crypto so far have been working mainly on the principles of promises. We promise you that we are going to achieve this. Invest in us. We promise that we have great data. We have great infrastructure. We are following the successful practices of Web2. But in the end, it seems that it wasn't that case. Like, is this what you're saying?
So I think that there's an assumption coming into this industry that it's relatively easy to lift and shift the infrastructure from Web2 into digital assets. It's quote unquote easy to move NetSuite or QuickBooks into Web3. It is not. It doesn't work. The Satoshis kill all of these systems. And so what happens is that when people move these Web 2.0 systems, as you call them, into Web 3, they not only distort the picture, but they cause a lot more challenges than you would expect. And so this entire industry is going to have to refactor and perhaps build from scratch a significant part of its infrastructure from the ground up. You are right. At the moment, it's Google Sheets and Human Sweat. That's it. That's what this industry is built on. And the quicker that infrastructure is built across the board, front to back, top to bottom, the better.
And do you think that companies realize that? I mean, current crypto projects and also the Web2 companies that are looking to join the Web3 space, do you think that they know about this issue?
From my many conversations, they do not know about this issue. From my many conversations, the Web 2.0 companies are still moving forward on the assumption that they can simply lift and shift, change a few fields, and be done with it. They now have a crypto-native product. If anybody wants to come and talk to me about that, you don't. It won't work. I've tried.
Yeah, and I suppose many companies have also tried and have seen that it doesn't work. So they have said, like, why we should put the efforts? We can do it with Google Sheet.
Well, not only that, but a significant number of non-digital asset native companies are simply looking at who will build the best product in their vertical, and then they'll go and buy them.
Mm. It's much simpler, right, to do that?
I believe so. It's also much less risky. It's generally going to provide a better ROI. It will introduce you to established customers. Like, it's a very, very standard strategy in an emerging market.
The only issue, I suppose, is that there are not so many Web3 companies with a great infrastructure that are worth buying at the moment.
Well, KaiX is here to change at least a little piece of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this brings me to the next question. Like, we have seen the, like we just mentioned, the failure of Celsius, but the previous year we saw the failure of three arrows, BlockFi, and many others. Like, they all said that it's because of the other company, it's not their responsibility, like the other companies are guilty for their failure, but that's their problem. I don't believe that that's the truth. I believe that each company should take its own responsibility for its own moves and partners, but that's another conversation. So but this podcast is more like a normal, ordinary investors. So what you're saying about the infrastructure is very difficult for ordinary investor to find out without having the opportunity to be inside the company, if I'm not wrong. So are there any signs or something that a person that is researching project that he or she wants to invest in can see that can somehow make him or her have the feeling that there are some issues with the infrastructure of the company or other red flags that in the end can lead to this chapter 11?
Again, great question. So there's a few items that a retail investor could look at with regards to many of these companies. One of them is LinkedIn. If they go to LinkedIn and they look at the operations people, the treasury people, the risk people, the people who aren't going to go and show up on podcasts, the people who are going to be behind the scenes, go and look at their profiles. Do they come from good, solid backgrounds? Are they builders? How long have they been there? Why were they brought in? Who are the people there before them? If you look at the back office folks, the people who don't get the glory, go have a look at them and just do a gut check for yourself. Do you trust this person to manage your money? It's not perfect, but for a retail investor who can't get counterparty documentation, LinkedIn is probably your best source of gut check validation.
Okay, and if I'm not wrong, you're also a crypto investor, right?
I am, yes.
Okay, so are there any other additional checks that you do to companies when you are deciding if you're going to invest in or not? Except these standard things like white paper, team, LinkedIn, social media, and things like that.
Well, now I send my friend some code to check that it's not a rug pull. But that comes through painful experience. I hope that everyone listening to this doesn't ever actually experience that. But look, you know, a lot of the projects are still so early. Okay, we're currently in the dot-com bust. Okay, so, you know, I take the analogy from the growth of the internet to crypto almost like very, very close. So when you have the dot-com bubble and the dot-com bust, we've just had another bust. Okay, so we're in about the year 2000, 2001 in terms of web 2.0, web 1.0 development. Okay? This industry is about 4 to 5 years old. We simply don't have a good enough track record to understand patterns, to understand which projects are going to be a success or not, in my opinion. And so when I look at new tokens, I look at the profile of the team involved. I look at the LinkedIn of the folks around them. I look at their community, and I look at the traction. How much excitement is there around this particular project, this particular token? And I think when you're looking at the very first stages, that's really where you're focused. The next step is I have a map in my head of all of the gaps in the digital asset space, all of the pieces that should be there but are not. And if one of these projects fits one of those gaps, then I get very excited.
Nice, nice. But one of the things that you just mentioned, something that I want to ask you more about, and you said about the excitement regarding the project. So don't you think that this excitement is somehow related to the hype marketing that the company is doing? And the hype marketing sometimes can be misleading in the end.
100%. I think it's a very good call out. I'm thinking about all of these factors with regards to a balanced way of looking at things. Okay. And if you have the best product in the whole world, but nobody knows about it, that's a problem. If you have the worst product in the whole world, but everyone's super excited about it, that's still a problem, but it's a different type of problem.
True, but we have seen that the bear market just proved us that the crypto projects, actually the crypto industry, had the second problem, mostly.
Agreed.
So that's why I said that I have talked with a lot of people about crypto investing, and a lot of them have also told me that they're also looking about the excitement. And as a marketer, like, this is very important for me. But at the same time, I know that sometimes, actually very often, especially in crypto, this marketing, this type of marketing, can be so much misleading that people start believing that this project is actually going to solve this problem. But in the end, they're just saying that they're going to solve it, but they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the strategies, they don't have the team. They just have the words on their website. We are going to do it. This is our mission. We are amazing, and you have to believe us, because we have spent enough money for people to believe us, enough money to influencers, so you have to invest in us.
Polar, you are completely correct. I'm talking to your audience as if they are, let's say, mature. Mm. And with regards to your comments, the real focus for how I think about doing these investments, doing this analysis, is that I'm looking at the whole picture. And it's very rare that I would put money behind just a white paper. I want to see something more than that. I want to see traction. I want to see an MVP. Mm. Now, do I suffer? Do I not get the best upside? Absolutely. But that's not my investment strategy for digital assets. 1% of my net worth is in digital assets. It's in the VC part of my personal portfolio. And yes, in the past, I have let that gradually creep up, but it's now rebalanced to 1%, which is right now, you know, where my risk appetite allows it to be.
Okay. And I suppose this is somehow a result of your experience with rug pulls, wrong crypto investments, and failed companies. So I'm wondering, what are some of the other top lessons that you have learned by these wrong mistakes, wrong choices, if we can call them wrong choices, because actually this is your way of learning. So it may be a mistake, but in the end, thanks to it, you are now here. So what do you think are the other lessons that have helped you to reach this current point of as a crypto investor, as a seasoned crypto investor?
So I would say that it falls into three buckets. Don't believe the hype, but look at the project. Two, it's really, really go deep on whether you trust the people involved. Go deep with regards to the LinkedIn profiles, the social capital that those individuals have, and really, really make sure that you are comfortable with it. And then third, it is look for the white spaces. So in the crypto stack, in the digital asset stack, look for projects that fulfill a need that has not been touched, not been conquered or dealt with by another project, another company. You know, one of the areas that I was particularly interested in was will management through DeFi. And I found a few projects that were involved with that. And I was like, great. And I moved on. The point is that there's still so many use cases and so many open spaces for people to get involved with and invest in that have not been dealt with. And so with that, those are my 3 points.
Nice, nice. It's great that you have something like a roadmap. And the main thing is that the main thing behind deciding if we're going to invest in a project or not, if I understand you right, this project is actually solving a real problem, a real pain, right?
Absolutely. Not only is it solving a real problem and pain, but there's a gap in the market that may or may not even be recognized. One of the reasons that we had to found Kayaks was because the space in the market was undefined, and yet the problem was so obvious to everyone who's in the space.
Okay, yeah, makes total sense. And like we discussed this already, still most of the companies don't realize that they have this problem. When we are talking about investing, I'm sure that you'll agree with me that in most of the cases, currently 70, 80, or even 90% of the crypto investors are not crypto investors, but they're gamblers, right? So do you think that there is a way for a person to do more investing rather than gambling in crypto?
Well, as a non-registered financial advisor, all of my comments are completely personal.
Absolutely.
But look, you know, when I look at this as part of my personal portfolio, I look at it as part of my 1% VC, high risk, high return piece of my portfolio. And that is it. Everything else falls into, you know, an investment thesis in my head. If other people can develop that investment thesis for themselves, they can graduate beyond gambling to investing. And again, it's an educational journey.
Okay, but this is not so easy, not so cheap, and not so fast process. So do you think that there is something simpler to start with?
Polar, like, good things come to those who wait, right? Like, put in the time, put in the effort, and you will get better. With regards to a shortcut to riches, good luck finding it.
Yeah, but, you know, everyone is talking about 100x, 1000x becoming a millionaire overnight. So it's pretty hard to somehow resist all these temptations to become a millionaire with $100. So I hope that there will be a solution soon for that.
Yeah, look, we're not part of that world. I'm a pretty boring, stable, put in the effort type of guy. And, you know, those projects that offer those returns, good luck to them. But that's not Kayaks and that's not me.
Yeah, it may make total sense, but yeah, like you said, it takes time to reach this point where you can realize that. Like, I suppose most people start the other way around, and I have also started the other way around, where I have been very tempted to invest in something because it's promising me an amazing returns, and I can be just a marketing consultant from time to time whenever I feel that I want to consult someone for 5-10 minutes per day, probably. And the whole other time, I'll be drinking cocktails and talking and wasting my time on stupid things. But in the end, I realized that the biggest chance is not to reach this point, but to actually lose all my money. But it's a process. You said that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Matthew, it has been an amazing pleasure to have you as a guest, and I'm sure that our listeners will enjoy our episode. But before we finish, is there something that you want to add as a conclusion, as a recap, or something that we have missed and you believe it's important to be mentioned as part of this episode?
No, I think you captured everything. Just make sure that you as an individual, like me, intentionally think about where digital assets are in your portfolio. Make sure that you put in the time, energy, and effort to do this right. And hopefully you'll get the right rule.
Perfect. Perfect finish. So, Matthew, how people can reach you and your company? No need to spell addresses or links or something like that. We'll include it in the show notes. But what are the best ways, or what's the best way for that?
Sure. If you send an email to hello@kayaks.com or go to the website and book a meeting there.
Perfect. Perfect. So, Matthew, thank you very much again for being a guest on my podcast. It was great having you.
Pleasure. Thank you, Paula.
So thank you very much to all of our listeners that have reached this point. Thank you very much. I truly appreciate you and your time. So I hope that you enjoy the episode as much as I do. If you do, please share it with your friends and make sure to subscribe to the podcast, because we have prepared another great guests in the future. So in all cases, I'm Power, the CMO of Seasonal Tokens, and I'll talk to you on the next episode. Bye.